Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tron. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fabulous, Jim. Just simply fabulous. How are yourself?
Excellent. Doing well. Doing well. We're coping. Hopefully, you know, to all our listeners, everything is at least manageable with the virus issue that's going on around the country. Unfortunately, here in Ohio, we've just got three cases that have been confirmed. So thankfully, it's not as crazy as, like, for example, the country of Italy. I understand that today they basically shut down the whole country and said no one in, no one out. I was talking to my sister who has works in an organization, and they have one individual that was in from Italy, and he can't go home. He's stuck.
That would be bum.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Would be
I mean, he's basically stuck. She's in Kentucky. And their organization and their plants in northern Kentucky. And he basically here is for an extended period, unknown duration. I mean, I can only imagine, but wow.
Yes, yes. I heard the university in Toledo is going to go, you know, they're going to stop the lecture until like March. Or not
yep,
March.
A lot of the universities are going to online classes. Here in the state and that kind of stuff. So obviously other states are affected a lot more than we are. You know, we're thinking about you guys. Hopefully this all comes to a better solution, and all the powers that be have got some planning ahead of them and figure out what all to do. But tonight we're going to talk about an interesting topic for Han and I. We've had minor discussions, minimal discussions, integration of this in numerous of our previous episodes of the show. But tonight, episode number 65, and it's titled An Architect is a Designer Plus Much More. And what we're getting at is that a designer is not an architect, but an architect is a designer plus. And that's what we're going to talk about. All of those pluses. Well, you know, we're going to have a real in-depth review of what a dental architect does and why the dental architect should be leading your project team, why it's so crucial to your success of your development, and, you know, that there's a bunch of opportunities to take advantage of and actually realize some savings. Savings on fee, savings on time, savings all around that a lot of folks don't really realize. And that, you know, as we discuss this process, we're going to give you some facts, but mostly help you to be more educated about actually what does an architect, a dental architect in this case, really do, and how do you go about picking one? Picking who should be that person that leads the team. So I kind of want to start out with just the we want to call it the Wikipedia, the Webster version. You know, what is an architect? In this case, when I say architect, I mean, what is a dental architect? We're just going to use that. What is a dental architect? Well, by definition, a dental architect plans, designs, and it reviews the construction of the building. Okay, so in this case, reviews the construction of a dental office. And the practice of architecture is the designing of the building and the space integrated in the site or effectively on your property. and dealing with the surrounding environment, all with the understanding that this is for human occupancy, is being the principal purpose. So it's open to the public. In a nutshell, that is what an architect is by definition. Now, we will go through an unbelievable list of things that what we do. And the actual profession of architecture is a very complicated one. I know when I first started out my career as a young whippersnapper, and I was about 9 years old. I told my mom and dad I wanted to be an architect. I had no clue what an architect did, but I knew I wanted to be involved in that aspect of the construction trade. And I'm glad I focused myself around that from that young age to move forward and you know, set my schooling, my planning and everything to be able to accomplish what I was trying to accomplish at. Because the profession of architecture basically involves the decision-making public safety. That's why we have to undergo specialized training. We have advanced education, unlike what dentists have to go through. You have to have specialized training. You have advanced education. We have to have an internship / experience, just like you have in your career path. And eventually it culminates with examination towards a license. We have to get a license within the typical state that we decide to work in. And we have to have, you know, pass that exam. It's a rigorous exam. Again, very unlike what you have to go through. So that's what the actual profession of architecture and getting to the point of an architectural license. Now you may say, why do I really need an architect? Well, Han, I'll let you talk about that because you and I have talked about that at length, and I've already taken too much of the show up already. why do you need an architect? Why do you need a dental architect?
Well, you need an architect simply because an architect's not just somebody that draw pretty buildings. Like Jim say, you have the education, you have the experience. There's a lot of things that involve that are not, it cannot be quantified, okay? You only enjoy it or benefit from it after it's built and you go, oh, that, you know, the when I migrate from this space to that space or when I go to the building, I'm not going through a maze, the door swing this way or a door swing that way. There's a lot of little things that involve that are, it's a huge mental exercise, okay? The reason why you need an architect besides the fact that they know what they're doing, they are the type of people that most of us would consider creative. They're born problem solvers. In majority of the states, the law requires that when you have a commercial building, that you're going to build, design, or modify, add on, whatever you want to call it, as long as you massage the physical building itself, you need the involvement of an architect. The architect is like the coordinator, or the conductor. They collaborate and oversee and manage the whole project team of engineers and designer and so on. Whoever is involved on the project from a technical standpoint deal or collaborate with the architect. So they have a responsibility, a huge responsibility on the project. And at the end, after everything's done, okay, in terms of drawings and detailing and all that stuff, before you can even take it to the city and submit it for a permit, the architect will have to sign, put his or her name on the drawing and say, I'm responsible for this. I have oversee, supervise, or involved in this project as required by the state law. And here's my name, here's my seal, and submit that. They are responsible for all the technical aspects of the project, directly or indirectly. In other words, if there's a portion of the project that's involved engineering, if there's a question that pertains to, let's say, electrical, the information usually flows through the architect to the electrical. They coordinate everything that's necessary, and they flow back out to whoever needs that information. So an architect is just not somebody that has that pretty face that you have on a project that you pay. They play a very integral part of the project. Majority of the project in the United States, with the exception of project in Texas, they
under 5,000 feet.
Under 5,000 feet. But even if you don't need by law, you should have them by design. Okay, and so the architect is not just somebody that you. You have sketch up the layout, and then they disappear because the contractor can take over. It's you're shortchanging yourself, and you expose yourself to having things that may or may not be at the quality you want, in the quantity that you want, or the way it was designed. Jim, did I answer your question?
Actually, here's some things that we as architects do. We prepare feasibility studies. What is a feasibility study? That's a question that a lot of people don't understand. You've heard the term. Well, a feasibility study takes into account every aspect of a particular project and determines, based upon the criteria that you say, let's say that I have, this many potential patients. I have this many patients right now. I have this particular staff. I have this demographic within this region to where I want to place this practice. All of those facts get thrown into the blender, if you want to call it, as it's being digested. We look at the potentials. If you don't have a piece of property, we look at the potential of property. Is property available, or are retail spaces available that you could go into and utilize them? All of that comes into play. A feasibility report should generate at its culmination a complete understanding that, okay, this is what you potentially could realize if you decide to do this particular building. And when we say this particular building, there should be at least an idea of a concept or a program. That program would say, okay, we're going to do this many operatories. You're going to be staffed by this many clinical staff. You're going to have this many individuals in the way of doctors. You're going to have this many in the way of support staff, meaning your administrative staff, and so on. You're going to say, okay, well, you need to have this square footage potentially of a building, whether it's going to be a new building or a retail center. If it's going to be a new building, it's going to have to be on this big a piece of property. Here are potentials for properties that will fit that criteria. It's a pretty thorough report, but it gives you the data that you need to have, that empirical data that says, okay, this makes sense. And that feasibility report is then information that you can use to back up your business plan, that you can use along with your initial design concept that we talk about creating, that you can use with your preliminary estimate cost from the contractor, and you put that in front of your banker, and say, this is what I want to do, and this is why I want to do it, and this is why I'm going to be successful. So, you know, that's a feasibility report. Another thing we do are called building audits. Han, you were going to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there is, you know, within our work toward the very front of the project, sometimes you hear the term, you know, bubble diagram, which I think is a more architectural lingo, or a blocking diagram, which would be more of a interior design lingo. Where do those tasks fit into the picture? And in your opinion, who would be best to handle that type of exercise? Could you explain that?
Yeah, the bubble diagram or the blocking diagram, as it's been called, is kind of like that term, you know, Kleenex is actually, you know, tissue. It's just a manufacturer's name, Kleenex. But that document or that task is really just a very small sliver of information that's integrated into the feasibility report and or the program of a particular project. It deals with mostly adjacency. It deals with the flow of the building, the flow of the practice, and the adjacency of those particular spaces. So it's like an internal kind of document. You look at the inside of the building, and what it does is give you that relationship between, all right, I want to be able to walk into the lobby. Makes sense. The lobby then has its relationship to what next space. Well, you're going to have a potential of public restroom, the reception desk, the clinical corridor, or something that or some kind of corridor circulation that leads you to the clinical area. Then you have the relationship of the clinical areas. How do you get from that corridor to the particular areas? You've got circulation, how you flow between, get to the operatories, get to the hygiene, get staff from the operatories and hygiene to sterilization, lab, supplies, and then of course you have the relationship of the doctor's offices. How do they relate in adjacencies to all the places, operatories, lab, front desk, the administrative area, and then you have the staff area that's usually located towards the backside of the building or some area that's less public. How do they then integrate into and circulate to the clinical areas, the sterilization, and then, of course, you know, to the operatories and or hygiene? And then how does exiting work throughout all of that? So that's what a bubble diagram or a blocking diagram should talk about. But mostly it's all about the adjacencies. It doesn't have sizes. It doesn't have heights. It doesn't have colors. It doesn't have what the look of the particular space would be. It really is just blocks or bubbles on a piece of paper that says my waiting room, which we don't like to call waiting room because it should be a lobby. You shouldn't let your clients or patients wait. That's not good business. The lobby is adjacent to the front desk, is adjacent to the front door, and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's what a bubble or diagram that we talk about is. Now, the next thing, Han, I want to talk about is, you know, we do things called building audits. Well, what the heck is a building audit? I know you've done a ton of them, so I'll let you talk about that.
Yeah, a building audit is an exercise where you identify the number of rooms that you need. Let's say you have operatories. Let's say they are, you know, 9 by 11, and you need 10 of them. So you basically have on your building audit, you have, you know, 10 treatment room at, you know, at 90 square feet apiece. So every room, every space is accounted for, and that basically gives you, you know, when you tally everything up, They give you approximate size of the building plus circulation, you know, and plus wall thickness and stuff like that. It gives you a general idea how big your, you know, how big each area is, how big each zone is, and how big the overall building. It's almost like being an architect or accountant, but it's more, it's kind of an exercise for space planning. You know, we use, you know, a general rule of thumb for us. If somebody asks, okay, I have, you know, let's say 10 treatment rooms. What is the approximate size of a building that I need to have? You know, our design factor is 350 to 400 square feet per treatment room. You multiply that by the number of treatment rooms, and it gives you a ballpark, you know, size of the building. But a building audit is when you break that down into specific pieces and parts. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. And let's say you have an existing building, or you're looking at evaluating an existing building. You would have a building audit done. And let's say an existing building, it might be a retail center, maybe a freestanding building that you want to buy, maybe a old medical office building or something like that. Then we would go in and evaluate all those things that Han just talked about, but we'll also evaluate construction. You'll evaluate the structural components. We'll evaluate the electrical, the mechanical, the plumbing, everything that has to do within that particular building against what we're going to talk about next, which is your program. We evaluate the code compliance issues and the handicap compliance issues, the American with Disabilities Act. You know, are all of the particular spaces of that existing facility, do they work? Do they fit the criteria? Do they fit the requirements? That's a building audit. We also would audit the envelope of the building, meaning is it of a certain particular construction and design so it maybe meets the current energy code? Is there enough natural daylight? Is there enough windows to meet the current code? Mechanically, is there enough fresh air that comes into the building space to meet the current code? All kinds of very technical but crucial things that have to be identified. And we've talked about it before. This is the kind of planning stuff that you need to do before you sign on the bottom line, before you sign that lease, before you sign that purchase agreement, before you say, I bought this building. You should have all of this, because it greatly impacts what you want to do next. And the next thing we want to talk about is the program planning. Now, what do we do as an architect? We help prepare your list of wants. That's, in a nutshell, what the heck a program plan is. It's kind of like a roadmap. It's a want list. We like to call it the needs, wants, and desires. Now, there's a category where you got to have. That's the needs. Got to have 7 operatories. Got to have this, got to have that. You got to have restrooms. That's code. You have to have the ability to be able to have lighting, you know, all those kind of things. So there's needs. There's wants. I'd love to have this particular space. I'd love to have an area for preparing this or storing that. And then there's the desires. The desire is might be, I want to have a separate office all to my own, with a private restroom and a shower and a door that leads directly to the back parking lot where my car is parked. Yeah, that might be a desire. Some people may say, no, that's going to be right there in the need category. Okay, fine. But that's what you put down in the program plan. And that program lists all this stuff out. Now,
Why do you do the programming overall, the whole purpose of doing the programming?
Because if you don't know what you're designing around and you don't know what you will try to integrate into the project itself, you're basically starting off with an unknown goal. If it's so loose and you don't have an idea, we as the architect don't have an idea what we're going to design. We don't know what your wants are. We don't know what your needs are. So what do? We have to guess. And you don't want us guessing as to what your needs or your wants are, because that's the last thing that needs to be done. We should have a really thorough discussion and be able to pin down and agree upon. And it's just like your treatment plan. You know, you're going to tell your patient that they should have this, this, and this done. You discuss it with them. You both agree upon it. And then that's what happens. That's what you go about preparing. That's the same. It's no different than what we do. It's kind of like our treatment plan. Equates to it, the architectural version of a treatment plan. That's what a program plan is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's always like you're shopping list.
Exactly. It is.
Yeah.
Now, what else do we do? What else do the dental architect coordinate the complete design team? We have, Han and I, over the last 64 shows, we have talked probably hundreds of times about coordination. But the whole idea of coordinating the complete design team is critical to a successful project. That in itself, right there, is probably one of the largest areas where you can take advantage of some potential savings. Because proper coordination will go unbelievably far in helping you to save time and money. Mostly big time time. And we all know what happens when you save time and is you end up saving money. You properly have things coordinated, construction moves smoothly. You properly have things coordinated, the schedule moves smoothly. People get things done when they're supposed to get things done and they're moving forward. You don't have delays. You don't have the aspect of, okay, my project was supposed to be done 6 months ago and they're still working on it. Well, we know what that cost. It cost you unbelievable time of money because you've lost all that production time. So coordination of the design team. I mean, we could do a whole show on just what's involved in the coordination of a design team. It's a very involved process. A dental architect should coordinate the complete team. That's why we say it's best to have the dental architect lead the team, because you're the one, we're the ones coordinating it. When we're leading it, then it's a much better solution.
No, just to play the devil advocate, Jim. You know, we run into this so often. So, well, you know, a dentist might say, "Hey, I have a great contractor. He or she can do all of that, and we don't need the architect." Could you kind of elaborate on that a little bit? Because it's it's a valid argument, but what?
Well, it's an argument. I don't consider it a valid one. It's a comment, and I don't consider it a catch-all that means, well, just because you don't need the architect means that I'm going to save money. No. Actually, you're going to cost yourself money. I don't care how much, the little few pennies you're going to save in fee that you would be getting back from the architect, you will never recoup because the contractor said he could do it for cheaper. The whole aspect of the coordination and the continuation from beginning to end is critical to a successful project. So when we start the initial design process, we talk about a lot of things. We establish that program. We establish what your needs, wants, and desires are. Those are integrated into a design, ultimately into working drawings, to something that the builder is going to build and take it forward. Well, unless that builder is there from day one, he has no clue of the reasoning why things were designed the way they were. Why was that particular space adjacent to that particular space? Or why was that particular material selected and placed in, on the wall or on the floor? The builder's going to look at it and say, well, I can do that cheaper if I just use this material. Or I can do that cheaper if I redo the ductwork a different way. Or I can do that cheaper if I don't put the rooftop units on and I put them over here on the ground. Well, all of those thoughts should have been reviewed back during the design process, because there were reasons behind why the selections were made the way they were. Now, if someone comes in after the fact, what's it do? It adds confusion. It effectively just throws away all the preliminary work that all the work you've done up until that point mm-hmm. in the decision-making processes. To what end? To save a few pennies from, the architect's fee? We've seen it happen, haven't we, Han? Where it actually ends up costing. Yeah, it costs the owner a ton more because all of a sudden the builder says, well, I can do it cheaper by doing it this way. The owner unfortunately decides to do it that way, and then all of a sudden comes back and says, well, because you've done this, now you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do that. All of a sudden, he's burned up all that fee that he's supposedly saved and lost a bunch of time, which costs more money.
Yeah, actually, a lot of times, I think when a contractor or a team member that a project team member that joined the discussion late in the process, usually that's the contractor, and they start to question why this or why that. They're not adding confusion to the project; they're adding their confusion to the project.
Well, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be just a contractor. It could be another team member. It could be an interior designer. It could be anybody that's added into the team at the wrong time is disastrous to a project. That's why the dental architect is the team leader, and he or she establishes the team from day one and moves forward from that. Huh?
Yeah, I think it's to manage and control problems is that if if the owner decided to bring in an interior design or a theme designer late in the game because they had some financial windfall and they want to invest into the building by interjecting some unique design and stuff like that, that's not a problem. The problem is when they don't introduce that member to the rest of the team so that they can catch up. You have somebody that become a role player on the project, interject ideas and things that could really affect the building itself. For instance, I was on a project one time where the interior designer, who's a residential interior designer, wanted to hang a certain type of tapestry on the windows. The problem is the design did not have he came late into the picture, and what he wanted to do required a structural element to carry it. There is no structural element. So, when that stuff, like things like that happen, you stop everything, you figure out how to integrate element that could make that particular design element work, or you abandon it. So there, every time something that creates a situation where the team have to stop, reanalyze what was designed, what was approved to accommodate a new idea that doesn't add necessary add value except aesthetic, aesthetic wow into the picture, it creates a lot of chaos, unnecessary chaos, which, you know, relate to delay, more time, more money. It's just a mess. Okay, so if you have something that you need to, you know, somebody to introduce into the project, do it early. It's just a blessing for everyone overall. Jim?
Yeah. And we talked about before some of the other things that we as architects do, but let's start off with the idea. The initial title with this is a designer's not an architect, but an architect is a designer plus much more. Well, let's get into the design role. The architect, the dental architect, as a design role, does pretty much three things. These three main categories are: one, we create the design concept. We create the dental design concept. We review your requirements. Remember, we've talked about what were the requirements. We've talked about the program planning, the building feasibility report. We've talked about the building audit. All of that stuff helps to create your list, your requirements. These are the things you want to have as part of your design. You may not even know what your project requirements are, so that's why you have to do those things up front. And we mostly prepare solutions to the facility use. Like Han, you mentioned in the first introduction part, we're problem solvers. We provide solutions. As a dental architect, during the design role, we provide solutions. And in that, we take into account, well, I've got over 14 items that are categories of what has to be taken into account. The first is quality of space. Han, we've had discussions about the imagery. We've talked about first impressions. We've talked about the quality of the look of the building when you walk up to the front door. When you walk into the doors, you got to take into account the quality of the space. Now, it's not just an interior thing. It's an exterior thing. It is the whole spatial experience when your patients walk up to your building, drive up to your building, drive by your building, all aspects of it. So you take into the issue, you know, what is the quality of that particular space? What do you want it to be? And we weigh that against the project budget. We weigh that against a ton of other things having to do with that particular space. And then all the other subsequent spaces. Lobby, front desk, even the restroom. What is the quality of that particular space? What's the imagery that you want to create in that? We take into account something called end use. Who gets to use that particular space? Well, obviously the staff lounge is used by the staff. It's not used by the general public. But the lobby is used by everyone. Everybody walks into it, everybody walks out of it, and so on. Han, you were going to say something?
When we're talking about, you know, this is things we do before the designing, okay? If there's a potential location, we do a bird's eye view look of the, you know, of the site. Where's your parking? Where's your dumpster? Everything that associate with the image that your patient coming into, just come onto the site, what would they see? Okay, so we can analyze every element that could affect the quality of how the space, the end product, going to be presented. And then, you know, some of the discussion could be, can this be resolved? Can this be moved? Can this be rearranged so that it's a little bit more palatable. Okay, so this is stuff that we look at before we even start to design the space. Jim?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's I guess I want to use the word all-encompassing in the sense that there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that are discussed. And, you know, Han and I have this stuff rattling around in our heads as we're thinking about how the initial design concept comes together. Now I want to go back real quick to your comment about, I have a builder who's going to take over after you produce these particular. There's a prime example. All that stuff that was talked about and discussed will impact what is actually created and put down on the final design and eventually the working drawings that the builder is going to build from. If that builder takes over and then all of a sudden starts to integrate the possibility of adjustments and changes, they have no clue of what all was done before. So that's the reasoning why there's no continuity between the beginning and initial concept and the design all the way through the culmination and creation of your building. Now, we talk about things called end use. We talked about that. Who's going to use what in particular is where. And that affects the design. These are aspects that we take into account when we're creating that design. We talk about things like connections. How should this be connected to that? And how does that connection work for this particular area or that particular area, along with the relationships? Relationships are, we know what a relationship is by definition, but relationship within a dental office, and as we as dental architects, is a relationship. Hans, this is one you really have a real issue with, and you always want to make sure that you look at. You don't want the public restroom opening into the lobby. Right?
That is absolutely right.
Okay. What's the imagery of that and the relationship? That is a relationship issue. Han, I'll let you describe that a little bit.
All right. If you're sitting in a waiting room, that's truly a waiting room, when you take your car in for service and stuff like that, this is not dealership type of thing. Most people don't care too much that you open the door, the bathroom door, and you can see the throne. That's a totally different environment. But for your office, the dentist's office, you definitely don't want to have the restroom to be directly out of the lobby or the. And we also call it the patient's lounge, okay? Because it's I don't know how I approach this without sounding like sexist. For the I have family.
It's
members.
A quality of space issue.
No! It's not just quality of space. It has to do with everything visual,
imagery,
sensory.
Yeah.
Oh, it could be very nasty. Okay, so remove that out of your. Out of the patient's lounge, it just makes the space just much much more nicer. We do all we can. If you have to have it within that space, we do all we can to screen it. Okay,
right.
Jim.
Yeah, that makes sense, and that's just one example of relationship. There's a lot of other relationships. There's relationships of you don't want. Clients, patients walking by sterilization, specifically, dirty instruments and, carts and that kind of stuff. That's a relationship issue. You don't want that to happen. You don't want relationships where, let's say you have a particular operatory that's for, screaming children. You don't want to have that in close a relationship to the lobby, for example. Worst thing you would have is to be able to have that sound and that noise of a procedure and a patient that unfortunately is very vocal being projected into the lobby. What's that do
they,
for
they,
your
yeah, Jim? They call them screamers.
Yeah. You know, what's that do for the quality of your space? What's that do for the quality of your practice? What's that do for the imagery and or the projected imagery of your overall service? You know, we think about those things. We look at those things. We identify those things. Locality is another aspect we take into account. Now, what the heck is locality? Locality has to do with where is that particular space located within your building in relationship to other external aspects. It could be a retail center. It could be a freestanding building. It doesn't matter. You have locality issues. You have to look at the locality of, for example, the operatories. If you place the operatories on the west wall of a building and have a bunch of windows, what do you have? You have a situation in the afternoon and evening where you're going to have a direct sun conflict. Sun sets, streams into your building, streams into your window, catches your patient right in the face. It's just impractical. It doesn't work. So that's a locality kind of thing. The locality is, do you want to have your operatories looking directly out onto the nastiest part of your building or onto a nasty view that's adjacent to your particular building? For example, maybe you have a property with the next door neighbor is a, pick something nasty, huh? A factory or what? You know,
yeah,
whatever.
Factory can be nice. Let's say
could be nice. Okay, let's make it a used parts dealer with a
keep it simple.
Inventory behind them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Here's an example. Okay, presently there's a discussion that I'll participate in where you have treatment room on the back side of the building. Okay, and a comment was made that I can pop windows in there. But if you look at when I look at the site plan, I see that there's a dumpster directly outside across the drive. Where
yep.
So a patient sitting in the in the chair looking out, and they get to enjoy, the dumpster. It may have the door open and everything ooze out, or the vulture and what have you. So, it's planning. It's not just simply I want a window in my treatment room, but what does that window allow the patient to see? So you have to take everything into consideration and weigh the pros and cons and make the best decision that will give you the best reflective image that you can garner out of that.
Right. Yep. Right. Now that is the mini list of what a typical designer would take into account. Okay. Now, as a dental architect, we add another, let's put it here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 more things to our accountability we take into account list. Okay. Now, these 8 things have to do with design, and let's jump into those. We take into account life cycle of materials. Well, what in the world does that mean, hon?
Well, let's say I break into 2 primary discussions, okay? Just because your colleagues, friends, neighbor uses it, I don't mean it's the right thing for you, first of all. If you are into a lease space, okay, a lot of the product lasts more than 10 years. So if you are in a lease space, we recommend a certain level of material because, God, I hate to see you leave, half of the life cycle or money still on the floor or on the wall for the landlord, which should hug you and thank you. But if you own the building, then the level of investment of the life cycle of the product goes up a little bit because you're going to be there forever. So the life cycle has to do with the life expectancy of a certain product and its performance and so on before you have to replace them. And it does deal with Maine, yeah, it does deal with maintenance and all that good stuff too, which is a topic that we probably should do a segment on.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on that, and it has every every aspect, every part of your building. We're talking things like floor. We're talking things like walls. We're talking things like ceilings, mechanical equipment systems. If you're building a new building, everything has life cycle discussions, and we take that into account when we're creating design. We take into account the next item. It's called technology. We all know what that means. It's basically the idea of IT and all the technical things that are out there. That gets integrated and reviewed, and we take that into account. So technology and design. Now, because we're running out of time here, I want to zip through this list and get through the other components, but we're talking about environmental issues. All the environmental issues that you have to that have to be reviewed and integrated are taken into account. We take into account systems, all the systems. We're talking about electrical system, plumbing system, mechanical system, obviously the IT and those kind of systems, your data system, anything in any system that's part of the building itself will be integrated and looked at when we're designing. We take into things called structural integrity. Now, if you're looking in the existing building, obviously that's a big issue. Structural integrity is, you know, is my existing building going to stay up? Am I, that 400, you know, that 100-year-old farmhouse that I want to turn into my new dental office, you know, does it have structural integrity issues? Those have to be reviewed and talked about. Now, here's some crucial ones, and we've talked a little bit about this before, but we take into account local and federal government jurisdictions, basically building codes. And Han, like what? We could do a whole show on just building code issues and how it affects the dental project, couldn't we?
Yes, we can. And please, if people whine about it all the time, okay? And you say, why do I need to do this? Why do I need to do that? Our answer to you is very simple. We don't make the rules. We just follow them. Okay? We don't
and
change
we,
the
and
rules.
We help
we
you
just
follow
them.
Right. Yeah.
That's
because
right.
Because you have to
being,
follow
being, them. That's right. Being in compliance is being living in peace. Okay? So building codes is one of those things that it's a necessary evil. But, again, we talk about life safety and health of the occupant, and that's including yours. Right? Yep.
Exactly. We also take into account planning and zoning, which includes, here's just a beginning list, not everything, setbacks, height limitations, parking requirements, transparency requirements, fresh air requirements, land use requirements. Now, I would say fresh air requirements, that doesn't mean just windows. You could have fresh air requirements. Matter of fact, you have fresh air requirements even if you don't have operable windows. Fresh air requirements has to do with the mechanical system. By law, the code requires that so much fresh air is brought into your environmental HVAC system so that you have cycles of replacement of air within your building. It has to do with the newest codes that have come out. And those numbers have changed. We see that they have gone up. The fresh air requirements have gone up. So older buildings that were maybe built back in the 80s do not conform. And so don't think that you can pop into a retail center, for example, that has a HVAC unit sitting on the top of it that was put up in the 80s or 90s, okay, and say that, oh, that'll be just fine. We'll just turn it on and everything will work fine for the rest of the space. Nope. More than likely, it'll have to be revamped, reworked, and redone to meet the new code. So that has to do with local planning and zoning along with fresh air requirements. Now, the other thing that is something we take into account is called energy reports. Now, there's a requirement now that you can't just use all the electricity you want. and you can't use all the gas that you want, and you can't build just, you know, you can't just build a building that's all glass. I mean, if you would want to, and it just, you know, is an energy hog, lack of a better term. It just takes you a ton of energy to be able to heat and cool that particular building. Well, there's laws out nowadays that say you only have so much that you're allowed to use per square foot, and you have to fit within the energy codes. So energy reports have to be created. Now, of this whole list, and we've got like 5 minutes here to wrap this whole up, but of the whole list under the design thing, only five of them are covered by the typical design group or design organization. And, you know, Han, we're not here to bash anybody. We're not here to say others do it right or wrong. We're just saying this is what you need to know. There is so many other things. There are so many other aspects in the design role that need to be taken into account that unfortunately aren't, unless you hire a dental architect. Han, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I think, you know, I want to be fair, okay? People, whoever you hire, they do what they do because that's what they need to do. Like, for instance, if if you ask why equipment company have design departments, because they need to have that. They rather sell you equipment and don't have to bother with the design or the attempt of design, but they do that out of survival. If they're honest with you, that would be their answer. So if somebody design or lay out a building around their system or their specific objective and not yours, you end up shortcomings that if you're not informed about, you shortchange yourself because you didn't have the right people looking at your design, looking at your need, looking at your want, and getting the best out of it. For instance, on my screen, I have a building that was designed by in the great state of Texas. Parking is a big issue for a lot of buildings, and on this particular project, I'm looking at a site plan where whoever designed and laid it out took up 6 parking spaces to allow the dumpster, the garbage truck to come in to take to empty the trash. If you know what the heck you're doing, you can regain 5 or 6 parking spaces by pivoting the dumpster. Okay? We as the architects don't just look at the layout of your space. We look at the entire environment, the entire surrounding, the facade of the buildings and all of that, and make the recommendation and do the design where you can capitalize on everything you have to give you the best value possible for your investment, period.
Right.
Jim?
Exactly. Now, real quickly, I'll go through the rest of the process, and I think we've talked about that before. You can go back to some of our other podcasts. But what we talked up to this point is basically the design of your space, of your building. Once that's been created, then we take and develop that design, further refine it to the point of all the materials are selected, all the systems are defined. We then create those working drawings that people call blueprints. Working drawings are basically a tool that the builder will take. They'll price it. They'll build from it once the building permit is done. Working drawings are what you take to the building department for permits. They have to review it so that everything's in compliance. And once that is approved by the local building department, which is another whole discussion in the process, but it involves just more than one people, you'll get everyone from the fire marshal to the planning and zoning folks involved, because they all have to sign off on it. including the building inspector and the plans examiner, and he or she will integrate a ton of other people to be able to make sure that everything is in compliance. And then your permit is given, your builder goes out and starts the construction. He or she builds from these documents. And then you've got to go through all of that process of everything from shop drawings to questions from the field. The architect is still here. We're still here. We're still part of your team. We're still coordinating. We're still helping to make sure that the initial design is continued all the way through and completed at the end of construction. Then when you have your end of construction, your final walkthrough to make sure everything is done per the initial and the complete documents, and you get your final CO, we're still here. We're still your advocate. And then we're still here for another year, because typical construction warranty is 1 year after the date of occupancy. We help, we walk through it with you to make sure there's no issues over that 1 year period that the builder has to come back and repair and help. And then after that point, we're still here. Han and I don't go away, do we, Han?
No.
You know, if it's 5 or 6 years after you've built your building and you're still in your, and you have a question, you call us up, we're still here. And you don't get a bill from us. do you, Han?
No, you don't. Because, like, you know, if you have a question, particularly, let's say you call and you say, hey, I'm experiencing this, you know, staff is kept bumping to the wall and breaking it. What can I do to resolve that? You know, we have the
now,
answer
what do
for
I
it.
Do?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's a gift that keep on giving in a positive way.
So, I hope this has been at least a thorough understanding of what, you know, what an architect, specifically a dental architect. You know, there's a reason why we say dental architect. Just any architect, and there's a lot of great architects out there, but dental projects are complicated. They're extremely complicated. They have their own little uniquenesses. So an architect who is thoroughly involved with dentistry and understands dentistry and the practice of dentistry and the users within that building is crucial to a successful dental project. When we talked about this program, I wanted to say, we talked about at the beginning of this program, how's the best way to select the dental architect? It's just that. Make sure that your dental architect has the experience level necessary to be able and has done this before and can show you that it's done before and can give you references from others that they have worked with that give you that peace of mind and that understanding that these folks know what they're doing and they're there from the beginning all the way through the end and past. I don't know if most people know, but in the state of Ohio, and it varies in every particular state, the state of Ohio, the architect is held liable for the project for 10 years after occupancy. So when I say we're still here, we're still here. On?
10 years.
10 years.
10 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you know, like Jim say, there is a lot of really good architects out there that do great buildings, okay? If they have not done dental offices before, we will call them clients because we help them, right? So, we do. Okay? And so, you know, when you're out there and the question come up from time to time is that, does my architect, friend, do they, you know, can I use an architect that don't have any dental experience before? In some cases, you can. If they partner with somebody that that give them a lifeline to go to, you know, to reach out to when they need help. But on their own, they, you know, the learning curve could be coming out of your pocket when they get an education. Okay, so get somebody that know what to do and how to do it. And we will be one of those, you know, we will be a prime example who could help you. Jim?
Yep, without a doubt. Well, we're a few minutes over. I knew we were going to, we had a lot of stuff to go over, and actually we could probably go on to a part two of this, but we wanted to at least get this information out. Hopefully it's been helpful to give you a further understanding about, okay, you know, everybody says, well, architectural fees, specifically dental architectural fees, are expensive. Well, it's an investment. And what you invested in is all of that stuff we just talked about. And that investment pays you back big dividends and a lot of advantages in potential savings, specifically having to do with time, specifically having to do with proper coordination, specifically to do with giving you solutions. That's the biggest thing, giving you solutions that are actually helpful and makes your life more pleasant, the practice more successful, your staff happier, but mostly your patients having a better experience. And when that happens, you do the great dentistry on top of having a great environment for that to happen in, you're going to have an extremely successful dental practice, and we'll have another great client to be able to give us referrals, won't we, Han?
Yes.
So with that, I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah. Jim, you left out something.
Go ahead.
Besides all the good things, you have a better quality, you know, building projects. Okay. So anyway, we burned through an hour plus pretty quickly. Hope it's been of value for you, and that you're learning things so that you can be more informed of making the right decision that fits you best. Thank you for spending the time with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.